Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Professional Insights Podcast. Thank you very much. Our sponsors are Brand Boulevard. Thank you very much, guys, for the prize for all of our gift for all of our speakers. One will be going to our guest today. But before we get to that, I just want to reintroduce ourselves.
Prizes.
All right, I know you are, Art. Like, you got to get free stuff.
Thank you, Glitch. Thank you.
My name is Brandon Curry.
Josh Bond.
And Trevor Lindy.
And Jeff is just delayed today, so that's okay. He'll probably be on another one. He'll get over it. And our guest is the president of the Ontario Chamber of Commerce, Mr. Rocco Rossi. How are you, sir?
I am doing so much better hanging out with you guys.
Well, thanks very much. It's been at least a couple of months we've been back and forth. You have such a busy schedule. I mean, you have such a massive membership base that have been hit so hard by this pandemic and by lockdowns and what have you. I just can't even fathom. I follow you. I have you as one of my follows or something on my LinkedIn. I always get all of your follows because I'm a huge numbers geek when it comes to, especially when it comes to vaccination rates. So I really appreciate that because you were one of the first people, along with another guest on this podcast, Grant LaFleche from now the Toronto Star, that you two were my main sources of data that I wanted to digest through this pandemic. And so thank you very much for starting that trend because I still follow you on all your different vaccination rates. For our listeners, can you give just a quick synopsis of like how big the Ontario Chamber of Commerce is, how many members you have, that kind of thing? That'd be great.
Right. Well, we're the umbrella group for 157 local chambers and boards of trade in every corner of this province. We were talking before the show started about Timmins, one of our great members, Toronto Region Board of Trade. They in turn represent over 60,000 businesses, large and small, public and private, and not just businesses. We also have colleges, universities, not-for-profits, really a broad cross-section of the Ontario economy, representing several million jobs between all of those members.
So how did you, how are you? Okay, so first of all, I'm going to go with just one of the obvious things that's on your LinkedIn. You always post these great informations, this data. It's purely factual data that you get right from public health, right? This is not like made up stuff. And you still, and God bless you for doing it.
No, he's not Trump.
No, he's not. No, this is all legit. God bless you. You don't turn off your comments. You allow people to comment on your posts. I've read a whole bunch of them. Walk me through just for a second on how do you compartmentalize, because I'm assuming some of them are members of your umbrella organization and what have you. You don't respond to any of them. You just let people just comment. How do you do that? How do you deal with that every day? And
well, look, I'm an enormous believer in free speech. I have the right to put out information. I do my very best to get the best sources that I have, because I'm also, as a businessman, as someone who believes you can't manage what you don't measure. And having that data gives you a sense of the size of the problem, where it's going, how it's trending, what's working, what isn't working. And it becomes a very powerful tool for the advocacy we do with government, and also the education and the data that we provide to our member businesses for them to think about measures. And I've just been blown away by how responsive business has been from the get-go on this. Yes, people focus on some of the, you know, the critics and some of the craziness out there, but by and large, you're seeing incredibly generous people want to get their arms around this crisis, understand that science is a good thing, and that we need these We need to apply that science to take on what is one of the greatest threats we've ever faced in our lifetimes. And so let's put the data out there. If people want to take exception, I'm also a huge believer that just shine a light on that, and that has an incredible impact on clearing out the nonsense, because people look at it and it's so obviously unhinged. They need to know that there are people out there thinking that way.
You were one of the big, strong voices in the very beginning of the pandemic. Not in the beginning of the pandemic. I mean, in the middle of the pandemic, when restrictions started to get loosened. So, and one of them being I saw your post regarding the AC, the Scotiabank Convention Center being at 100% capacity and restaurants around the same vicinity only being at 50%. How did you, because in theory, MLSC is a member, potentially, yep. And so
it is a member,
and so yeah. Are their affiliated restaurants members, yeah. And so you've got the same member that's allowed to be at 100% for one and 50% for the other. How do you compartmentalize that argument and go back to the government and how did one get announced and not the other? And I'm not saying that's you, I'm just saying, how do you manage that when things are happening so quickly?
Look, my dad always reminds me that it's best to tell the truth. This way you don't have to remember what you said. We try to be consistent. And one of the reasons we took that on, even though, we were delighted for the members like MLSC, like the live music venues, like the other sporting venues, that they got to go to 100% once they had the vaccine passport system and proof of fully vaxxed people coming in. And we said, hey, one of the reasons we were huge proponents of introducing the vaccine passport system, even when the premier was opposing it, was we wanted to have tools to help manage the pandemic to actually allow our members to go to 100%, because no business model is built around only ever getting 50% capacity, right? No. That is a fast way to go bankrupt. So we pushed, they adopted some of it. They wanted to go stage by stage, but we needed to keep the pressure on to say, hey, these organizations are following exactly the same rules. They're doing what you've asked of them. And if you're not going to give them the right to go to 100% under that system, then you better be prepared to cut them a check, because they are taking one for the team. And they have been taking one for the team since the beginning of this pandemic. And it's just not fair.
Everyone here totally agrees with you on that one. I am a huge proponent. I mean, I didn't want to have it, obviously, but I mean,
Nobody wants to have restrictions, right? It's whether you need them, because the alternative is another full lockdown that, quite frankly, no one wants.
Yes. It's
same
funny
cost
because
to getting a stab in the arm, though, too, right? I don't want a needle.
Yeah. Nobody wants. Oh, I can't. Like on Thursday, I get my flu shot. I can't wait to go to the doctor's office and give me a break. I don't want it. It's the alternative. I remember learning how to drive and my dad, it's very similar to that. You kind of quote your father as well. I'm driving, I'm still doing the speed limit 50, 60, and a guy cuts in and I'm right up this guy's behind. And my dad's like, would you slow down? I'm like, well, I'm in the right. And he goes, what's the alternative? Yeah. Congratulations. You're 6 feet under, but you're in the right there, son. Slow down. You are in the right. You should be able to go at the speed you're going at, but that person's the idiot. But regardless, the alternative is bad. I do completely agree with you on that one. The inundation of requests you must have received during this time, what is your feeling? Well, I mean, it's clear as day. All levels of government, all had no plan for a pandemic. Doesn't matter party. I don't care. Any party can sit there and squawk. They did not have one in the repertoire at all. What is going to be the OCC's plan and maybe the Canadian Chamber of Commerce's plan going forward to make sure that this does not happen again? SARS was our warning sign. Obviously, no level of government took it, which was in 2003. What are you planning to do to work with governments and with municipalities and everything to make sure that there is a plan going forward so this doesn't happen again?
Well, you make an excellent point, and it's good to remind people of SARS. And, you know, for a while after SARS, there was a plan. And warehouses were filled with PPE, and there were additional investments made into R&D. And a big part of the reason the messenger RNA vaccinations are available now is because research and investment was put into them. So it wasn't done overnight. People kind of freak out, oh my God, this has only been developed in 1 year. It's been a couple decades of research into that area, in part because of SARS. But the problem is the nature of most people is the further you get away from a crisis, the more quickly you forget and you get into the latest thing. And so the PPE that we had stored in those warehouses, it goes bad. It's not there permanently, and it wasn't filled. And people start to worry about, oh, well, we got to trim costs here and let's avoid that because, you know, it's a once in a generation thing. We have to keep this as a reminder in front of us. We need to have a full debrief at the end of this and pull those lessons out. And you're absolutely right. No one had a plan, but to be fair to all levels of government and all political parties, at least for the first part of this crisis, we had an unprecedented amount of cooperation and collaboration between levels, between parties. It's fraying now as people do their political thing, but it was crucial. And it isn't a given, as we saw south of the border. You know, it's not always the case that when there's a fire that everyone will reach for the buckets of water and help put it out. Some people throw gasoline onto it. We didn't have that in any kind of major way, which is a plus and is one of the reasons why, aside from Japan, in terms of OECD countries, Canada had the lowest death rate per capita due to COVID. And so I do think it's important to give people kudos when they get at least some of the stuff right. But if we just forget about that going into the future, then shame on us. And that is a huge disservice to all the sacrifices and, quite frankly, the deaths that have occurred. The best way to honor those people is to make sure we don't permit it to ever get to that level again.
So do you think some of the, there was lack of planning is one thing, but also this thing was an ever-changing beast. Every day was a different, like they're just trying to figure it out. I do want to give, and I'm not being political here at all. I'm being very factual. I vividly remember you sharing something from Premier Doug Ford, releasing the data, the graph data. Hey, if we don't do something, because I'm a huge proponent in being completely transparent and honest with people, we're adults, let us make our own decisions. Should that have been done earlier at all levels of government? Should that have maybe, do you think it was too early that we did that? Like, where do you think the role of municipalities lie in that aspect?
Look, net, I'm with you. I'm a huge believer that transparency and giving people the information, while sometimes it leads to problems, overall, it's the best way to proceed, because if not, people are always worried there's a hidden agenda. They'll act in ways that go against where you want to get to. It's not a way of rallying people to the cause. And this is something where we needed societal buy-in, right? Because it's when people work together that we're able to bring things under control. And when there are people who feel, well, we'll just let everybody else do the work and then reap the benefits at the end, but no way am I going to do X, Y, and Z, that comes from misinformation or lack of information. So I think by and large, we didn't get it right all of the time, but by any means, more often than many of the other comparators around the world. The other thing that was important to your point about things were changing quickly, it's actually one of the lessons that we need to take out of this pandemic is government by its nature is not designed to go quickly. Right. That's why you have opposition parties. That's why you have committee hearings. That's why you have royal commissions. Everything is designed to slow things down, to think through what's happening, to go out there and focus group it and poll it and look at the problems. And COVID basically said, dude, that is just not good enough. I'm going to kill a bunch of people if you wait that long. So the key is, can we, based on the information that we have, and we learn new things as we go, but the best information that we have, take our best shot, and then be prepared to listen to people and adapt. So we had basically a laboratory of how to accelerate public policy development, how to keep doors open to information to adapt. So whether it was the wage subsidy program going from 10% that clearly wasn't working to 75%, or the rent subsidy program, or a bunch of other steps, it's take your best shot, understand that it's not going to be perfect, and then be prepared to improve it. And I think while you can't do all of government all of the time that way, in a world that is becoming progressively more and more competitive, being able to speed things up at least some of the time is actually a good thing for our competitiveness.
Now, you hit on a couple of things that are just there that I wanted to get into, which is a great actually segue, which is amazing, which is the government support. Again, your members or members of your umbrella organization. Again, you have we're a member of the GNCC here locally. And Flip Picario and Lindy, I think, yeah, both of your businesses are both members of the GNCC as well. Here's the question I had.
And Mishka is a great leader. I'm a big fan of the work that they do.
No, it's phenomenal. Yeah. I guess the question that I had is but your members are also restaurants. And as you know, they are struggling to find people right now. A lot of that is, and I firmly believe it's anecdotal right now, but we'll know later on. A lot of that is CERB. A lot of that is the go home, here's some money. And just when you're making, you know, $13 an hour, it's pretty easy to do that. I'm a huge proponent. I think what did really well was the wage subsidy, meaning you're keeping people employed and you're keeping them with their employer, but the government's coming in and helping and maintaining people so that they're not, you know, when work opens up, you still have those staff again. And I'm not saying you have to agree with that. What is your take on it now that we've gone through essentially almost 18 months of a universal basic income?
Well, we were huge proponents of using wage subsidy versus just putting people on to EI for exactly the reasons that you're raising. Keep people connected to businesses. And quite frankly, almost all of those government employees that are managing those systems were also being forced to go home and work from home. And so you backed up the system, whereas you had a whole bunch of payroll systems that could get money into people's hands faster. And it took a while to make that work. It was a key part. It has been playing a key part. I would nuance your comment just a little bit on the, you know, we're competing against CERB, because what's interesting is, you know, in the U.S., they removed their enhanced employment insurance some time ago. They're still having the labor shortage issues because this is not solely an issue of competing against government money. In an average year in Ontario before the pandemic, we would have roughly 500,000 foreign temporary workers and international students at any given time. This past year, 100,000. That's 400,000 people that CERB and Enhanced CI has got nothing to do with. They're simply not in the market. And those people were filling jobs. You've also had far more in the way of retirements happening in a number of sectors at different levels, because people have said, hey, 2 years has been taken away from my life. And yes, I could work another 3-5 years, but I'm okay. I can get by being a little more modest in my needs, but I want to live my life. I'm going to make different choices. The immigration issue is huge. So all of those things are combining to cause these issues on the labor front. And we've got a lot of work to do. And quite frankly, we need to do a ton more on training and retraining, because the pace of change is accelerating. And what you study in school, with very few exceptions, is going to have relatively little to do with the career you have a decade into it. And so the jurisdictions, the countries, the provinces that figure out how best to incorporate lifelong learning so that people are adapted to the job opportunities are the ones that are going to win.
Fair.
I just want to digest. Okay, Trevor or Josh, do you have any?
Yeah, questions? No. I think it's a fair comment. I mean, I'm committed to lifelong learning constantly on the job or outside the job, right? And I mean, it's such an important tool that a lot of people, once they've got their careers, they brush off by way of the dodo bird sometimes, right? And I mean, it's constantly learning. How do you find that? Because a lot of the chamber's role is by design, kind of rallying with governments, right? What would you say that your workload in that rallying went to if on an average year it was 100%?
Yeah. I mean, this is one of those circumstances where it was 120%, right?
I got to be at least, right?
Yeah. Like, and it's, look at, again, to quote my dad, anybody can be a leader in good times, right? Mm-hmm. It's a relatively easy job. It's when times are tough that you prove your worth, your character, and you earn your title and your salary. We've never been more relevant, but at the same time, we've also seen circumstances that the single hardest part of my job is the calls and emails I've taken and letters I've taken from people who are at the end of their rope, who have lost their business, who had personal guarantees and are going to lose their house. The mental health issues that we knew were a problem even before COVID have been magnified many times with the anxieties that have been created throughout this crisis. And it pains me. The reality is, despite all levels of government saying we've got your back and the best efforts of the chamber and other organizations, tens of thousands of businesses in Ontario alone have gone bankrupt during this pandemic. And we should never forget that, that there is an enormous price that is being paid in the dreams of people. And business, as you well know, look, it's not just about selling goods and services. Business, and particularly our small business, our Main Street businesses, they're our street culture. Right? They're the places people have gotten their first jobs. They're where you've taken your first date and bought your first important present. They're the people who are sponsoring the local hockey teams and baseball teams and watching Main Street's board up is incredibly painful and dangerous. And that's why, for all of the debate around supports, the alternative is allowing the permanent scarring of permanent bankruptcy, which is far harder on an economy and on a society than ponying up and doing what we can to keep people's head above water till we get to the other side of this.
You have so many different, like I said before, so many different sizes of businesses and what have you. When, I just want to know, when did being a business owner become such a dirty word? Like, is that, like, why are we, why, I understand in 2008 and 2009, the whole, you bailed out Wall Street, you didn't bail out Main Street. And listen, I wholeheartedly agree with, hey, AIG doesn't need the multi-billion dollar bailout. The person on, like, the Mon Pa hardware store needs the, you know, the bailouts and that kind of stuff. I understand that context. But what I didn't understand was the kind of the visceral reaction to some of the that I saw online from people on the bailouts and like the wage subsidy, the rent subsidy, things that keep these people afloat because they have no income coming in. When did that happen and why has it happened? When you look at the property taxes that these people pay.
Well, and the jobs that they provide and the contributions to the community. I mean, I'm with you. We don't do enough to celebrate the incredibly positive force that business is. And unfortunately, there, as in all aspects of life, there are bad apples. There are people who run roughshod over the rules, but they are the minority. They're not the majority. And unfortunately, you know, you pointed it that you see this online. We didn't have online before. We didn't have this mechanism that you could use to just spew vitriol at a volume that we've never seen before. That unfortunately has also been stoked up by various individuals and celebrities, and you know, he who shall remain nameless played that that game, despite being wealthy himself, is just feed on people's anger. There's always things to be angry about, and ratcheting that up and throwing more gasoline on it is no way to move forward and to really provide people with the opportunities that we all want to provide. And I think business should be seen as heroes in our society. And that's why we at the Chamber try to celebrate them as much as possible. And every year we have our Ontario Business Achievement Awards. And that's one way of shining that light.
What is the, now, what do you see coming down the pipeline? And we kind of just briefly chatted because, like, for example, we're the finance sector, so we weren't as hit hard as other sectors, duly noted, and I acknowledge that. What additional funding for, like, getting these people back to work is coming down the pipeline? What do you see happening? Like I told you about, you know, people that we're looking at hiring, however, they're out of university, but they need credentials to work in the finance industry, right? Like, you just can't.
We're at about a half an hour, and I mean, I've got a question kind of that's kind of interrelated, and wouldn't mind Rocco's kind of two cents on universal basic income too, if he'll provide.
Yeah,
it right
if you want to, then maybe let Trev, you want to wrap this up episode, and then we'll
sure. Yeah, we can. Jeff's waiting.
Okay, so to everyone that's listening, we're going to have another episode with the president of the Ontario Chamber of Commerce, Rocco Rossi. So thanks very much for listening to this episode. Please share, care, and go ahead, Bondo.
Help us help you stay informed.
You looking to make the most out of this life and optimize your personal wellness? Then check out the Natural Man Podcast. Join me, host Mike C., as we explore all areas of human wellness, physical, mental, and emotional. Learn strategies to optimize your own well-being and be in the driver's seat of your own health. Remember, your doctor works for you. Learn biohacks, neurohacks, ways to improve sleep, and ways to optimize your body and your mind. Check us out on Apple, Spotify, The Fountain App, and at naturalmanpodcast.com.
Do, Did, Will, the Story of People podcast is now available on the Crier Media Network. The first five episodes are here and feature some incredible guests that fit into one or all three of those categories. Ready? Tara Sloan from the San Jose Sharks, Undercurrent podcast at NBC Sports. Marianne Iveson from Iveson Voice and the Let's Take This Outside podcast to talk about the world of outdoors as well as voiceover land. Ariana Hunsicker, future Canadian Paralympic swimmer, already winning tons of awards for this country. Scott McGregor from the Hot Wallet podcast to dumb down the world of crypto, Bitcoin, and NFTs so you don't have to. And Jackie Holowaty from Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle, Washington, the first net zero carbon certified arena on the planet. Wherever you get your pods, wherever you watch your pods, and on the Crier Media Network.
Produced by Crier Media and distributed by the Sound Off Media Company.